want to take a couple of callers this morning. Let's start with William. William's in West Belfast. Morning, William.
Good morning, Joel. How are you?
What do you make of what you're hearing this morning, William?
Yeah, well, first of all, Joel, let me say something here. There is people on the breadline at the minute. Very serious people. Our friend are struggling so hard with the benefits they're on, this bedroom tax, everything, all this legislation that's going to be put in. I think the Speaker there should make it very, very clear that his party should block this. And the same as all parties, people are struggling at the minute, Joel, really struggling. And I know we're struggling, because I speak to a lot of people who are really struggling. All parties in Northern Ireland are MLAs, this is a testing time for them. Let them come out now and show the people now who voted for them that they're going to block this.
William, how do they pay for it if they block it? It's not as if, you know, the Treasury in London are going to say, well, that's fine, you've opted out of this, so we'll keep giving you as much money from the Treasury as what we do. They'll pay for it in another way.
Joel, I understand it, but times are very hard at the minute. People really don't know what people are going through at the minute. They're listening to people like you on the show, Joel, speaking to that last speaker. Why didn't he just come out and say, yes, my party's objecting to this? And I would like to think that the MLAs now are going to say, we've had enough. We've had enough of cuts. We've taken them for so long, we're going to block this. There's people out there now really panicking that this bedroom tax is going to come in. If it does, there's a lot of people going to be losing money. People can't afford to lose money. They're struggling.
Mickey Brady? Yes? What do you mean, what William said?
No, I think what William says makes a lot of sense. I mean, what I would say to William is initially some parties wanted to kill the bill in terms of petitions of concern. The difficulty, of course, is if the bill is killed, there is no doubt that it will be imposed in some shape or form. I think it's incumbent upon us to consider all the aspects of the bill, look at what we can attempt to change, and look at what we can't change, and then make a decision as to how we approach that, whether it be with petitions of concern, amendments, or whatever. There are various options open. But I mean,
we are not in a position in Northern Ireland financially to kill the bill, are we?
Well, the issue here is, of course, parity, which is this arrangement whereby benefits here have to reflect what happens in Britain in terms of benefit. And that is a big issue, which really hasn't been addressed, and really the amount of discussion around that has been minimal in terms of how it does and could impact here in terms of changes in benefits.
Of course, if you don't implement the changes, you're into all sorts of other areas.
In terms of
IT systems that are going to be set up for imposing the new system, you would have to probably change that. You'd have to put your own IT system in. I mean, that's going to cost millions.
Well, I mean, if you consider, Joel, the technology that's available now, it doesn't seem unreasonable that if there were particular issues that applied here in the north, that an IT system couldn't be developed where you would pay for it. We have telephones, mobile phones now that contain more technology than the Americans had when they landed a man on the moon. So it doesn't seem a huge stretch of the imagination to think that an IT system might be brought into being which could deal with all of these issues.
Yes, that you would pay for.
Well, obviously there would be a cost, but that cost would have to be weighed against the effect it's going to have on the people that we represent here in the north.
Let's talk to Patrick this morning. Patrick's in Derry. Morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Joel.
What's your view on this, Patrick?
Joel, here's an injustice that leaps out at me right away.
Mm-hmm.
30 years ago, you were allocated a council house. I'm just saying a council house, right? Because you had a boy and a girl. You have spent a fortune in your home. This house is your home. You've done up your home. You have it immaculate. You've looked after your garden. You've spent a fortune in your garden. You've that immaculate. And they tell you now that your children are left, this house is too big for you. You have to go to a one-bedroom flat. And you say, well, where is the one-bedroom flat that you say is enough for me to live in? And are you going to compensate me for the 30 years of carpets, furniture, and everything else that I put into my home?
Yeah, but
are you going to compensate me for that?
Yeah, but for clarity, that this only applies to housing association, housing executive housing. It doesn't apply to owned homes.
It's housing executives I'm talking about. People that live in housing executive houses also do up their own homes, also look after their gardens, and also keep their houses immaculate. Are you supposed to move out of a house that was your home for 30 years because your children have reached age that they leave school, and you're supposed to move in? They have one bedroom flat.
So that should be taken. That should be taken into consideration, you feel?
Of course, if it's not been taken into consideration, you should be compensated for the money that you've spent keeping that home immaculate. Otherwise, people aren't going to bother their head doing anything. Just live in their house. Let it be a hovel, because they're going to be turned out of it anyway after 30 years because the children have flown the nest. That is the problem. Are people going to be compensated? That this whole thing wasn't thought through. And by the way, the English are cold-hearted. And all they see is bricks and mortar.
Well, let me put that point to Robert Oxley from the Taxpayers Alliance and Bishop Stephen Lowe. I mean, Robert, this hasn't been thought through, and you've heard the point that was being made there by Patrick. He's given a specific example where you could have a couple who have been living in a housing executive home or housing association home, and they've been there for 30 years, they've invested in their house, and because their children perhaps have moved out of the house, they're being told, well, no, you're going to suffer as a result of this because you've bedrooms now that you don't necessarily need.
Well, it's an unfortunate situation, but you know that home has been paid for by taxpayers for the entire time. And when we have a huge shortage of homes for people, when you've got a huge waiting list for people who are in overcrowded houses, how is it fair on A, those who are waiting, and B, those people who are paying for it, the taxpayers, to continue to subsidise someone to have two spare rooms when they're also having to, you know, try and find somebody else on the social housing waiting list, a house which has enough room just for the children they've got in there? So, you know, I think, you know, this idea of a council house for life, a housing executive house for life, just isn't sustainable at a time when you've got huge housing shortages because we've failed to allow enough properties to be built. So it is a difficult decision. No one's pretending that. But ultimately, if somebody else is paying for your home, and you know, taxpayers need to give that resource to somebody because it is a very precious resource at the moment, somebody who needs it more, I think that is the right thing to do, and it's the fair thing to do by taxpayers and those people who are waiting for a home.
Patrick?
Well, let me answer you this. First of all, those people that are in that house could have been working, could have been a taxpayer too.